What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Tonight is a historian, philosopher, and best-selling author of Sapiens. His latest children's book is called Unstoppable Us, Volume 2, Why the World Isn't Fair. Please welcome Yuval Noah Harari. Thanks for joining me. I've been,
good to be here.
You know, watching your stuff for the last like over 10 years, since before I came to America. Love it. You kind of specialize in dealing with the history of humanity and the rise and falls of civilization. What made you think that was an appropriate topic for children? This is some pretty heavy stuff, man.
Yes, but you know, you need to understand history to know even the most basic things about yourself. Like when I was a kid, I often woke up in the middle of the night afraid that there's a monster under the bed, which happens to a lot of children.
Yes.
And you call your mom, but you also want to know why is it happening?
Right.
And history actually holds the answer.
What is the answer?
Because this is really a memory from hundreds of thousands of years ago when humans lived in the savannah and there are actually monsters, cheetahs, lions that came to eat kids in the middle of the night.
Okay, see, so is that something you want kids to know?
Yes.
That these monsters were once real and they killed kids in their sleep.
It's important to know that because you then understand your own emotions and feelings better. You understand that I'm not crazy to be afraid of these things. Or for instance, lots of kids, like adults, they wonder, why do I like to eat so much stuff that isn't good for me? Is something wrong with my body? And again, history holds the answer.
What is the answer?
Because all those hundreds of thousands of years ago, it actually made sense. If you walk along the savannah and you find something sweet, like sweet fruits, it makes sense to eat as much of it as quickly as possible. Because if you eat just one or two fruits and go away, by the time you come back, the baboons ate everything. So it makes sense under those conditions. Now, today, it doesn't make sense when you open the refrigerator and find a chocolate cake to eat all of it.
Sure.
But your body doesn't know. Your body basically follows the program of evolution from all those years ago.
Yeah, it's programmed. So if you can't do anything to stop it, then what are you telling people?
No, you can stop it, but understanding yourself better is an important step to having greater control of your life.
Those are good examples, but I'm going to quote your book here.
Yes. Please.
Let's get to the chapter in this children's book called Diarrhea Days.
Oh.
Where I quote, someone who got diarrhea couldn't keep down any food or water, and sometimes they died from it. Is this something you really want kids to know?
Yes, because you know it actually explains where most of the epidemics and infectious diseases came from. Hunter-gatherers suffered from no epidemics. They lived in very small bands. If somebody had diarrhea, then immediately all the band would move to another place. And in any case, only like a few people could get it.
Okay.
But once people switched to agriculture and we had the big agricultural revolution, then you have thousands of people stuck permanently.
So you're saying the first humans ate a lot of berries and shed their pants and moved on and yeah.
Yes.
How do you tell that to kids though? Like, what's your approach to telling, you know, how do you even, everything you just told me as an adult, I'm fascinated by. Mm-hmm. But when you tell a kid, are they, you know, they're like, okay, give me more berries. You know what I mean? Like, how do they, you know, how do they absorb the lesson you're trying to tell them?
I hope that it's written in such a way that even somebody who is 8 or 9 mm-hmm. is fully capable of understanding it. Mm-hmm. It's actually more difficult to write for kids than for adults.
I agree.
Because with adults, if you don't know something, you just use these complicated words and long sentences, and they think they don't understand you because they don't understand.
Yeah.
With kids, you have to speak very simply.
Yeah, like sometimes we died from diarrhea.
Yeah.
See, so this is what I think. This is what I think. I think you wrote, you've written Sapiens before, which is a great book for adults. And I think that there's too many dumb people who couldn't understand what you're saying. So you wrote this not for kids. You wrote this for dumb adults. That's really what this is. This is a book. You took your thing. You put some pictures in it. See, there's an illustration of someone dying from diarrhea. This isn't from kids. This is for dumb adults, right?
That's one explanation.
Right, right. And you want, and like, you know, I feel like a lot of what you're telling us is the message of what history is trying to tell us now. I feel like that's what you're trying to decode mm-hmm. right now, a lot of it. And I guess what is the message that history is trying to tell us now?
Many messages. I mean, one thing is to beware of unintended consequences of what we do. Like, again, the agricultural revolution, people thought it was a good idea. It brought about epidemics. Mm-hmm. So same lesson for the big revolutions of right now, like AI. The more important message is that the world in which we live have been created by humans, and therefore humans can change it. If something is unfair, it's not the laws of nature that created, you know, our economy, our nations, our religions. They're all created by human beings.
Right. And yeah, you see, that's that. It sounds hopeful, but if you think about it, you're like, oh no, humans did all this. What hope do we have? No, I know, but like, what hope do we have of changing things? I mean, how much of, I guess what I'm saying is, how much of this is inevitable? You know, like when you study history, you go.
No, history is never deterministic. I mean, like, you think about technology. Every technology can be used to create very different societies. You think about, I don't know, North Korea and South Korea. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same technology. But they use electricity in a slightly different way. One place, they produce K-pop, and just up north, big hats and missiles. So,
okay. am I supposed to just take that, or am I supposed to... okay, fine, well...
No, but and on a more serious level, again, people have a lot of fears about technology, what it will do to our politics.
Yeah.
But again, you think about South Korea and North Korea. So same people, same history, same technology. And you have a liberal democracy on one side and a totalitarian regime on the other. Mm-hmm. So it's not the technology that is shaping our politics or our regimes. It is what we decide to do with the technology.
Sure. Well, you say that. You say that we are in charge of the technology in a way.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kind of one of the thesis statements of your book is that we're all going to get replaced by technological beings.
If we make the wrong decisions. I mean, it's not inevitable. AI, like electricity, like, you know, the earliest, I don't know, writing, when people invented writing. So you can do many things with the technology of writing. Uh-huh. You can write poetry, you can write taxes.
You can say f*** you as well. You can write like a...
You can. Yeah. But again, it's a choice of people. Actually, interestingly enough, the first person that we know his name, he was not a conqueror. He was not a big prophet or king. He was a geek. He was an accountant. Like, we have these stone and clay tablets from ancient Mesopotamia mm-hmm. with accounts mm-hmm. of payments and receipts and salaries and stuff like that signed by these ancient geeks, and they are the first people.
Okay, you keep calling these people geeks, and I'm like, do you like them or you don't like them? I don't know. Are they good or are they bad?
They're good. I mean, Jesus said the geek will inherit the earth, no?
All right. So back on that topic, so you keep saying, you know, stories are the superpower of humans in a way, right? Everything we kind of do, if you think about it, from culture to politics to even money.
Yeah, money, money is the greatest story ever told. It's the only story everybody believes.
Sure.
And, you know, it's when you look at it, it has no value in itself. The value comes only from the stories we tell about it, as every cryptocurrency guru or Bitcoin enthusiast knows. It's all about the stories. There is nothing else. It's just a story.
Okay. So, is it real? Is Bitcoin... Is you telling me to invest in Bitcoin right now? I don't know what you're... So, is it a good thing or bad thing?
It's kind of a cyclical thing. If enough people believe in it, then you can go to the supermarket and buy whatever you want. If people lose faith in the story, then it's worth nothing. And that's true of the Bitcoin, it's true of the dollar, and of every other currency that people ever invented.
Okay, you see, when you talk about these things, you're always very objective. You always be like, hey, man, I'm just telling you how it is. I'm not, what do you think? Do you think, you know, what makes you go f- this? You know, because when you talk about history, you're always like, oh, you know, the humans came out and then some of the ate berries and, you know, you maintain this kind of academic objectivity.
But That's the idea.
But what actually do you go, f*** this shit? This is awful. What makes you go, because you seem to be okay with everything. You're like, yeah, machines come, it's a tool. We don't know. You go like, f*** AI, this is bad. Like, what makes you go, no?
The question about every story, whether about money, AI, whatever, is whether it increases or decreases the suffering in the world.
Yeah, you see, I mean, this is a non-answer. Just tell me what you hate. Tell me what you hate.
What I hate?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, so, okay, can we tell this right now? So you think that you're openly atheist?
Yes.
Yes. So can you clarify right now that God is just made up?
Yes.
Can you please say, okay, so God is made, we had it here? Okay, yep. God, can you say into the camera, please? We need it. Right.
Humans created God.
Okay, great. That we settled it, that's great. This guy, we solved it.
Again, it should be emphasized, just because human created it doesn't mean it's bad. It can also do good things
for us. Stop hedging this. Just let it ride. Just go with the sucks. We need more. See, this is my problem. I think we need more people with kind of objectivity, calmly discussing things. I don't think that's, you know, is anything in what you've seen with humanity telling you that we can, you know, pull ourselves out of, you know, all these downslides in history?
Absolutely. I mean, humans have enormous... I mean, all the problems we face, we also have the resources to deal with them. Whether it's climate change, whether it's the rise of AI, we have the resources. What we usually lack is the motivation and the ability to cooperate with one another. But, I mean, you know, some people think that to solve the big problems, you always need to use violence. Like, you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. But when you look at history, it's absolutely not true. You think, for instance, about the feminist revolution. After thousands of years of a huge injustice, feminism made a huge change in the social structure of humanity without starting any wars, without assassinating anybody, no guillotines in City Square. So that's one of the hopeful examples of how people can, just by changing the story, also change the world. I mean, the idea that stories...
I think you're converting people to your religion right now.
The idea that stories kind of fuel history, there is a positive promise there that, you know, if it's all about power, the only way to change power structures is with violence. But if it's really, at least in part, about the stories people believe, then potentially by talking with people and changing the stories in which they believe, you can change the world.
Okay, that's very optimistic, but I'm not hopeful. So, I mean, one last question. One thing I really enjoy about your work is that you like to tie kind of current modern behavior to, like, our evolutionary beginnings. Mm. So for example, you know, like you said, we wake up in the middle of the night when we're kids because we ran from actual monsters when we were children. So I just like to know, why is it that whenever I pee, I shiver? Like, what was the evolutionary
reason? Maybe you should ask a doctor, I'm not sure.
No, I'm asking you, Mr. Expert.
I'm not an expert on everything.
All right, the last thing I found very interesting is you said that, like, right now we have humans composing things and AI amplifying it. Yeah. That's our current situation. Mm-hmm. And you say in the future, we're going to have AI composing things. And
already the images you saw before of AI generating fake images.
Yes.
This is basically a kind of art.
Sure.
So it's still the first steps.
Right.
But AI is still a baby. It's like, you know, 10 years since the start of the major AI revolution.
Right.
So we haven't seen anything yet.
Okay.
And it is very likely that in a couple of years or decades, much of art, many of the stories we believe, even religion, will be increasingly created by this alien intelligence and not by human intelligence.
Okay, see, that's bad. That's a bad thing. Well, you just said that. That's not good.
That's a very dangerous thing. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so are you going to say that? Can you at least say that's bad? Are you gonna...
Yeah, that's bad.
Okay, good. I finally got him to say something bad. Okay, I don't know. I guess I'm equal parts hopeful and pessimistic about the future. I'm sorry.
That's a good stance.
It's
a balanced stance, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Unstoppable Us, Volume 2 is available now. Yuval Noah Harari, everybody.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Whose new book is called Selling the Dream, The Billion-Dollar Industry Bankrupting Americans. Please welcome Jane Marie.
Hi.
I wrote a book.
You did?
Yes, you did. And I tore right through it. It's a great read. It's fascinating.
Thank you. It came out today, so I haven't heard any feedback. I don't know what anyone thinks of it, but
I'm
glad.
Is this the first feedback that you're getting?
Pretty much, yeah, outside of the people that helped me write it.
Well,
it's a great book.
We'll tell you how much we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
This world is fascinating. You go deep into the world of MLMs.
Yes.
And people call them by many different names. MLMs.
Network marketing, direct sales.
Pyramid scheme.
I can't call them that.
You can't.
No, because I'll get sued.
You can't call them that, but right here on the cover.
I got a lot of help. I got a lot of help with the cover art. Yes.
What exactly is an MLM?
So a multi-level marketing company is a business that's shaped like this. Slightly.
But we can't call it a pyramid.
Yeah,
there's a couple people at the top. Then they have the upline, the top sellers, who are supposed to recruit, like, usually five people each. And then they're supposed to recruit five people, and they're supposed to recruit five people infinitely. And the way the money flows is that each person who signs up pays, like, a fee at the beginning to sign up.
Yep.
Or sometimes they have to pay for some products and stuff, but they're paying those fees in. And then they fail pretty quickly, usually, and then more people sign up. So that's where the money comes from.
And isn't it something like 99%
make no money or lose money. Only 1% make a dollar, even.
And we laughed when you said infinity because... Infinitely, because you can't keep doing that.
13 levels, and you surpass the population of the Earth.
Right. So
yeah. Right. Exactly. Impossible.
Totally impossible.
MLMs specifically prey on women.
Mm-hmm.
These Tupperware parties, the sex toy parties.
So fun.
And they're so fun.
Aren't they? But, and we get to hang out with our friends.
Wait, I want to make this about me for a second. But
sorry.
Please.
Why not
why
men?
Stop now?
Yeah.
Well, no.
To go to a nose trimmer party or a beef jerky.
For you. Okay. There are, first of all, MLMs for you.
Okay.
As soon as this is done.
Yes. It's crypto or there's telecom companies. There are like lots of dude MLMs. But 75% of people involved are women. And it's because the companies go after people who have some sort of economic precarity or like trouble, you know, moving up the ranks to. Here's the thing. There's the pay gap we're fighting against. If someone called you today and was like, you could make another $1,000 a week just sitting in your house and talking to your girlfriends and selling makeup. And that, if that was true, I would be doing that.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Where
do I sign?
Yeah, where do I sign? Let me do it. So, you know, we all make less than men. We all take care of the home. We're all homemakers. We take care of the children. We have, like, we don't have, especially at the age, you know, middle age, we don't have that kind of movement in the economy that other people get. And it's not just women, because it's now becoming, you know, immigrants or people, you know, anyone who is a population that has a hard time getting really good, solid employment, right. Mm-hmm. Which is everybody right now.
I also feel like they sucker women in with this promise of, you know, you can achieve independence.
Yeah.
You can be your own girl boss. And yes. That's alluring.
Girl boss, yeah. I'm 46 years old. When I hear girl boss, I'm just like, yeah. Boss babes and fempire. But it's true. My great-grandma did Avon. And it did help her feel like some agency in her life, because she didn't have a career. She got pregnant at like 14 and had a bunch of kids, and really didn't have like a job outside of that. And it felt good to get on stage or get a pin or get like a fancy jacket and be around people and be lauded. So I do think those things are really valuable. And I think the parties are really fun. They're actually super fun. I don't know. I did one in my house when I was like 20. It was like a lingerie party. And everyone came out and modeled their
Tell me more.
Boudoir yeah. sets.
Go on.
You touched on it a little bit, but besides just that you can make $1,000 a week, there are some psychological components
yes.
that they recruit with.
Yes.
And to me, that's almost more powerful.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what they do.
So the recruitment is, you know, just things that appeal to all of us. Like, you can have time and money and freedom, and you don't have to have any qualifications, and the world is yours. And we have a secret, you know? We have
right.
a secret that
right.
they don't want you to know. So then they rely on these logical fallacies that we all kind of rely on in our lives, and one of them is honoring sunk costs. It's like when you buy a lemon for a car and you get it worked on and worked on and worked on, there comes a point where you have to be like, I can't fix this car, and I have right. to get rid of this car.
This is me at the blackjack table.
Okay, that's exactly yeah. right.
I've lost $1,000, you might
well,
as well
be... Well, now I'm in $1,000,
right.
what am I gonna do, walk
right.
away now?
Right.
Like, no,
yeah.
I'm gonna...
All this time and energy, you gotta
yeah.
stick it
yeah, all this time, and how much time does it take for you to lose $1,000?
I bet this? In, like, small $1.
So, all night.
But it's the whole free... I get a free martini, but I've lost $2,000
right.
at the table.
Right, and then you've lost $2,000, and I'm feeling the anxiety of even you just saying that, where
right.
I'm like, you can't walk away
right.
at $2,000. So that's what they rely on, is that they know we're all going to do that. And there's a bunch more, like the idea that, and it's a truth, that we feel losses much more than gains.
Yeah.
We feel them in our bodies, like, as trauma. And a gain is like, okay, great. But a loss is like, you know, and so we do everything we can to not realize the loss,
right.
to not experience the loss. So we stick with a plan that's not working for a really long time.
Is there, can the government regulate this, help us? I mean, isn't this what the Federal Trade Commission is
you would
meant
think.
To do?
Is there legislation that can be passed to correct this?
There's things are being worked on, but I will say, just to give the FTC a bit of a break, their purview is so enormous. They are tiny, first of all. They're like the size of the smallest of MLM in terms of the people that are there and the money they get to
right.
use. They're tiny. And their job is, and listen to that, like, especially after the pandemic and stuff, their job is false product claims, credit card fraud, you know, phishing, spam, every kind of fraud, your grandma getting taken by somebody that she's never met over the phone. Like, and when you put that up against MLMs, where the people who are signed up are like excited about it, it's hard to
right.
put that first, although this is such a bigger problem than those things in numbers. So they have a tough task, and I don't blame them. You know, they're doing the best they can.
So technically, MLMs are legal.
I believe they are not, but they exist because I use this comparison all the time. Like, that's like being, like, I'm a murderer. and because I'm in jail. And then I'm not a murderer because I'm not in jail.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. But yes. The MLMs
so it
will
be
say,
illegal, but they aren't being treated as such. So what can be done to
say,
stop
if the FTC
this?
Is not stepping in,
no.
What can smart American people do to
buy
not
my
be
book.
Lured in?
Buy
your book.
My book.
You do need five other people to buy the book also. But for real, what's our defense?
It really is talking about it. You know, that's the only thing we can do because the government doesn't have the capacity, and that's understandable because there are so many. I talked to the FTC recently, and one of the women I was talking to was like, it's a very target-rich environment right now. And I thought she meant, because I was asking her, why don't we go after these companies? It's a target-rich environment. I thought she meant there's too many MLMs, and she was talking about us. She was like, this is the perfect environment for these companies to come after you. Like, we are all desperate. We're all, like, wanting to realize the American dream and believe this is a meritocracy and believe this is a place where you work hard and you get rewarded for it and all that, you know?
Right.
Whatever. So
talk about it and be aware of it.
Talk about it. Tell your friends. Yeah. You know, they're fine pitching you some garbage hair product or whatever. You should be fine being like, you know what?
No,
this
thanks.
Is not cool. And I think the tide's turning.
Thank you very much for talking with us. Selling the Dream is available now. Jane Marie.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Everyone is talking about IF.
I'm going to go on a limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting!
IF. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.